Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Dr. Jeff here with my esteemed colleague, Jim Case. How are you, Jim?
Hi, Jeff. Good, thanks. Good seeing you. Been a bit.
I got a question, man. Are you ready to dive in tonight?
Oh, dude, I'm so ready to dive in. Feels like it's been like forever since we got to dive.
It has been, yeah. You got the, jonesing for a good dive here?
Absolutely. What do you got for us today?
Well, this is one that's been building for a while, and I'm kind of thinking there'll probably be a part two or part 20 or something to it, but I'd really love to dive in and explore the truth about gender, the truth about the masculine and the feminine, and how that shows up for us individually, how it shows up for us relationally, societally. We've kind of been doing it for a while, you know, showing up here on the planet as men and women. And the new term I've heard, tweeners, I hope that doesn't offend anybody. Have you heard that term, tweeners? Short for in between?
In between male and female?
Yes, masculine, feminine, that sort of thing.
I don't know that I've heard. That seems familiar, but I don't know that I'm associating it with that.
Okay. So overall, that's the direction or the playground that I was wanting to play in this afternoon. And just for starters, one of the background premises that I'm going to try to lay out or establish is that this has nothing to do with body parts. That body parts and the expression of the energy oftentimes go together. But guess what? Sometimes they don't. and when they don't, there's just as many miracles from that as there are from when they do. And this can get confusing to a lot of people, particularly those maybe that are working toward opening their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Man, just the willingness to have an open mind. I can't think of any greater characteristic or skill to me than someone that has the willingness to have an open mind. I would prefer to work with somebody that doesn't have much of a mind to work with at all, that is open, rather than somebody that has the most brilliant, but yet closed, opinionated, shut off, disconnected mind. And that's what I hope our audience has and wants to bring and maybe is inspired from what you and I through our interactions create is two guys that know a little, have had some experiences, but mainly I hope have open hearts and also open minds to explore all of this stuff. So what I'm laying out so far is this idea that gender defined by body parts is probably not a good way to define gender.
Well, what was occurring to me as you were talking is we probably need to do some definitions, because I was thinking in terms of, okay, so you were saying there's physically there's male and female. In addition to that, there is masculine and feminine. And then in addition to that, there is masculinity and femininity, which are all different components of this thing. And then of course, gender at the root of it, male and female, you know, or whatever variation or form. I don't think there's any variations on gender. I think gender is pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Well, it used to be, but I think that's why we're having this podcast right now, is because it's gotten a little blended or gray, perhaps. There might, again, be this tweener thing that, you know, is stimulating some of this. You know, you go to a bathroom at Walmart now, and there's not a man or a woman on the door anymore. There's just a person. And mm-hmm. it's your choice on how you feel that day as to which room you occupy.
I happen to like that a lot, that breaking down of sort of the social construct that somehow evacuating your body requires a different room for different sex.
Well, as long as everybody can behave in there.
Well, I mean,
right?
If it's the same room for both sexes that you can shut and lock the door while you're in there, and you know.
right.
But that it doesn't, you know, how many times have you stood in a restaurant while waiting to go to the bathroom and the other bathroom is completely empty?
Well, I'll actually use the other bathroom.
I will as well. But how many times has that, you know, and how long did it take you before you finally went, this is stupid. Why am I standing here when there's a hole to pee in right there?
Right. Well, let's keep going down this path, because I have no trouble walking in and using the other bathroom.
Not at all.
However, when I'm finished and it's time to walk out, I have this kind of weird feeling of, is somebody going to give me a hard time for using the wrong room because I have a different body part? Even though my stuff gets flushed down the same way their stuff does, would somebody feel creeped out that's the opposite sex because a man went in and used the restroom?
Well, you know, it's funny. I arm myself. I decided a long time ago that whenever I do that, that if I happen to run into a woman coming out of the woman's restroom, that I would just smile and sheepishly say, I'm really sorry, I couldn't hold it, I had to go. And typically people are like, oh, whatever. You know, it isn't a thing. But right. I actually planned that so that if it ever came up, I could graciously kind of sidestep the whole thing by just saying, you know, it was either there or the floor. So, you know.
And that's awesome. But why do we even have to do that? Why can't we just look the person directly in the eye and go, oh, the room's empty now. You can use it. It's just a room to do what we do there. And what you do and what I do is very much the same. And as long as I don't go in and make a mess and I'm not slovenly or, you know, whatever, gross. I'm not going to pee on the seat or all that sort of thing. It's like, if that's all good, why does it matter?
No idea. I think it seems that, especially publicly, it seems to matter less and less. I mean, like restaurants and things like that. I think it's a little different, obviously, if it's a multi, a multi-hole unit. That's a little different. You know, I mean, in my experience, it's kind of funny because if, you know, when we go to gay bars, it's not a thing. You know, I mean, and actually both sexes will go in either bathroom. Typically the gay men will go into the women's room and that's not a big deal. The women don't typically go in the men's room, but they don't need urinals. So, you know, it's not right. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Let's push just a little bit deeper here. I'm thinking of an event. Let's say it's a public event and it's like, say the Rose Parade and that whole area is going to have massive truckloads of porta potties that do not have a men and women on them. Mm-hmm. They're just porta potties. Cause it's like, if you're a human being and you need to get rid of your stuff, here's where you do it. Yeah. And nobody has an issue with that.
Yeah. No.
Right. So let's take that same area now, but the Rose Parade's gone and all its toilets have been picked up and there's some really high end restaurants there, or there's some really high end ritzy resorts there that the women's restrooms have perfumes and lotions and all these, you know, more feminine things available for them, and the men have theirs. You would not cross that line. You would like have to sneak in at midnight, you know, and do some kind of clandestine operation to get in and out of there.
True.
And you would run the risk of, if you did, would someone come out into the restaurant and call you out on it, you know, or take a picture of you?
Call security.
Exactly.
Yeah. It would not end well.
So I'm wondering, in the general masses where we were dealing with the Rose Parade, where come one, come all, this is an opportunity for you to go to the bathroom, versus the more cultured, upper crust, whatever, however you want to describe that. I wonder if maybe that's where some of this is coming from, that the more propriety you have to live by with regard to the class you live in or the status that you have, that you just wouldn't cross that line. That would be barbaric. That would be, you know, disgusting. I could just see it in my mind how that would just be something you would really hate to have to do in a really nice restaurant or a resort or something like that.
Yeah, and again, the only way that becomes a problem is multi-use. That if it's what I call, you know, if it's what I call a one-holer, you know, if it's, I don't care. It's a no, you know, and what I'm finding more and more is that most restaurants are actually going that direction. They actually have changed their placards. And so now they all just say male or female. There's no, you know, there's no restriction or limitation because they put diaper changing stations in men's rooms as well as ladies' rooms. And so it's, you know, in that regard, I think it's getting easier. It obviously, you know, if you're going into a multi-use deal, it definitely is going to create a little more challenge if there's, you know, three women in the restroom and you come in, decide and go to the bathroom, might be a little weird.
Yeah, I could just see how in our discussion, I've kind of been mixing apples and oranges where the porta potty is a, as you called it, one holer versus a high-end restaurant or resort, which is multi-use. So I will retract my statement. And
well, no, I mean, I think what it actually shows is that there's a whole lot of, there's a lot of hypocritical energy around that, but particularly around the sexes around that. But that seems to be true in a lot of things. You know, I mean, we're looking at how many states have suddenly gone off the rails on the deciding to legislate women's bodies. Louisiana just signed another ridiculous, you know, thing about women's bodies that it's just monumentally hypocritical to me that any male has any right to say anything about what a female does with her body any more than what a female would have to say about what a male does with their body.
Yeah.
But the point being is that the hypocrisy is in execution, in that that keeping the sexes separate and in some ways lesser than, depending on what you're focused on. You know, depending on what the issues are, whether it's bathrooms, whether it's, you know, sex, whether it's jobs, whether it's work, whether mm-hmm. it's pay, there is a, to the way I see it, there seems to be a bent to maintaining this idea that the male and the female are not equal in their expression or in their livelihood, and that to me is kind of remarkable, because it has such a huge impact on everything. But then all the decisions that get made are made from that viewpoint. So here comes the tweeners, as you were saying, which really encompasses a lot, because it's not, it's, you know, I think that gay men and women fall into that in-betweener place, because it is the LGBT process that actually started pushing that in a different direction. You know, and getting people to be more open to the idea of this isn't a women's room or a men's room, this is a bathroom.
Right.
You know, and to stop sexifying them, as it were. I made up that word. I don't think it's real, but whatever. you know, and not to be going all political, that's not the point, and not going, you know, in that way. It's just, we want to talk about this sort of the evolution of the masculine and feminine, the male and female, and you know, maybe we should kind of decide what aspect we want to focus on. Are we focusing on energy? Are we focusing on physical expression? You know, where do we want to drive this bus?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I think by the end of our podcast, we'll probably have hit all facets of it. I'm hoping to anyway, but just starting out with the obvious or the basic, which would be body part, little kids getting born, and, you know, 30 seconds after the delivery, it's announced, it's a little girl, it's a little boy, you know, simply based on body parts. And it isn't until language is developed and dress styles and play styles are viewed and observed that mom and dad goes, oh, well, you know, Johnny has a penis, but he really loves playing with Barbies. And he really loves it when his sister's friends come over and interacts so much better there than when his own friends come over, or he doesn't have friends come over, or he's not invited to go to the little boys' parties. And then, you know, dad gets concerned that he's done something wrong and he's going to let his dad down, or in some way, Houston, there's a problem.
Yeah. When
in actuality, there isn't a problem. The only problem is we think there's a problem.
So you made some really good distinctions that I think are important to emphasize. And that is the idea that there is male and there is female. That's real. There's a physical, biological thing. There's male and there's female. And yes, I guess there are some spectrums of that, but those are few and far between. Largely it's, there is male assignment and there's female assignment in the physical body. But the ideas of masculine or feminine are actually learned.
Yes.
They're actually trained. They're actually trained is a good word. Because we assume that based on the either male identity of the physical or the female identity of physical means that we now have to focus that individual into a specific pattern of thought and expression that we call masculinity or femininity. And we begin to train from like you said, from the second they come out of the womb, we start to train that energy or that focus.
Yeah, we put little boys in blue clothes and little girls in pink clothes. Mm-hmm. And if you go to a baby shower and you're not sure what the sex is, you bring yellow clothes. I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yep. It is. But I think that this is where we can probably really dive into the meat of the masculine and the feminine I think the issue is not so much about identity as a physical body as it is, how do we unravel the truths about the energies we express? Because again, you know, our whole deal is in large part, what's the energy? And the challenge is that, you know, nowadays, maybe in our generation and going forward, there is more expansion going on in that whole arena because of all of the different types of people in the world and all the different quote sexual preferences, which really are not driven on whether you're a boy or a girl. Well, I guess sort of. Because of the labels, even the labels are specific to sex. You know, it isn't, gay people aren't men and women. Men are gay and women are lesbians. You know, there's, and that's starting to go a little, because now they've got all that cisgen stuff and things that I don't even comprehend what they mean or why they've now needed to delineate it down to, you know, this kind of minutia. Other than as an exercise to get to the point of recognizing that it's all about energy. So people needing to or desiring to identify a particular aspect of their masculinity or femininity and draw it out is bringing more conscious awareness, especially to potentially people who are going to become parents, that they no longer pigeonhole their kid. That they allow the kid, and you see that in a lot of stories where parents are supporting their biologically born son to express and explore what he feels, which is he feels feminine, he feels like not a boy, and so there's a migration of some that are beginning to accept that and beginning to foster that. So that people can, these kids coming in can begin to find, well, what is it? You know, okay, I'm a boy, but what's my energy like? What do I like? What do I feel? How does it feel? You know, and that acceptance is beginning to have a, I think in very beginning to have an impact on shifting some of these identity roles, you know, and locking people into one or the other.
Right. I'm wanting to establish another truth here for our podcast anyway, is that one is not better than the other.
Exactly.
At any level, about anything, in any way, that we show up here in relatively equal numbers and we live relatively the same length of life. You know, some would debate me on that, a plus or minus 5 to 10%. And so therefore, in an economy and in a value position, absolute 100% equality with regard to being here, your value of being here on the planet, regardless of what genitalia you have, mm-hmm. or how you express that in the way that you're living your life in terms of masculine, feminine, or anything in between, is not what the debate is about, not what the discussion is about with regard to one being better than the other. Mm-hmm. It's really more about understanding each so that we can celebrate our differences and really try to understand them and understand that the more unique, as opposed to having one choice or the other, male or female, anytime you have more menu choices, you're going to have a broader expression of what being human really is. Which, if you stop and think about that for a moment, is kind of a cool thing. So the more choices we have to appreciate the expression of being human, the more rich this experience that we have to be able to experience it. Mm-hmm. You go to a restaurant with 3 menu choices versus 30 menu choices. Generally, people want more choices. They want more opportunity to experience different things.
And I think we're seeing that more and more and more. I think it may be part of the frustration that people voice about, like the millennials in particular, and who came after the millennials? Or is that the one that's now?
I think that's the one that's now.
That's the one that's now. So this batch of or this generation of beings coming on the planet are much more tuned into those subtleties.
Sure.
And exhibit an unwillingness to play in the existing structure, which I think is what has caused so much frustration, is because, no, I'm not going to identify the way you say I have to identify. No, I'm not going to express the way you say I have to express. I'm going to express what's going on here. And I'm going to feel and experience that, and I'm going to have whatever I have about that. And no amount of you throwing a temper tantrum or raising your patriarchal hammer or any of that is going to change that. The system, you know, it's almost like it's almost like they're saying this the system will change before I do. And it's created this enormous tension, and also an enormous, I think, blossoming of greater understanding for more people, if they're willing to stop long enough to kind of assess that, how that whole gender, all the gender roles are shifting, and that I keep getting hung up about the gender versus the energy.
Well, let's talk about the energy then.
Yeah, because the physical thing is the physical thing. Everything that happens after that is all about energy and all about what's happening on the inside with regard to the balance of the male and the female energies that are moving through that particular individual. And what they choose to express or how they choose to express or what energy they choose to lead with in any given situation, which changes. You know, I think it's one of the remarkable things and one of the amazing abilities that we do have is that when you get to a point in your experience where you're no longer solidly identified as I'm a man, so I'm masculine, I'm a female, so I'm feminine, that as you become more connected to your experience, as your consciousness grows, as you become more aware of who you are, the ability to migrate between the two and to be facile in those expressions is enormously powerful, because now you're not taking a club to every situation. You're actually using parts of that energy, the masculine energy, to forge forward. And then once you get there, you use the feminine energy to stop and experience what's happening in this moment of what I just forged forward to.
I like that.
You know, and so that ability to do that becomes incredibly powerful, because you're not locked into believing it has to be one way or the other. You're kind of going, well, no, this situation warrants me to be softer or more yielding, where this situation requires me to be more direct and more forceful. And so we're beginning to be able to be more skilled at exercising that and being comfortable with it, you know, in the world. Like, it's not a big deal to shift gears, you know, where that may not have been the case even 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Right.
Now shifting gears can be, is encouraged to some degree.
Sure. You know, I happen to have 6 different versions of the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, version 1 through the one that we have now, which is, I think, 5TR or something like that. In the original version, homosexuality was listed as a mental disorder. Mm-hmm. It came out, I think, in version 3, that was no longer listed as a mental disorder. And then they put in all these different branches, gender identity disorder. There was another one that was some kind of confusion, sexual preference, sexual orientation. These were all new terms or maybe subcategories of what originally was homosexuality. The good news is they're all out. None of them are included in the version that we're using now. There can be,
that's cool,
a social, there's one that's listed, like, you still feel the pressure socially to be a certain sex, but you're okay with it, but the environment you're living in or the network that you're operating in won't allow you to be that. So there's confusion about, can I really be who I am and still have mom and dad love me, still have, my boss accept me? Will I be able to keep my job, keep my family, keep my friends if I'm really who I am? But that it's a confusion, not about who I am, but about, can I actually do this?
That's a really good distinction, because I think that's true of most, is that there isn't a confusion about how I feel. The confusion is, how do I express how I feel and what's going to happen when I do?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many tendrils that come off of this topic.
Yeah.
I was being waylaid there for a second, thinking about the realities of how what we're talking about in the way of energy is so inexorably tied to the sex identification.
Sure. If we go back to, I'm tempted to go get it, but I won't. I want to say that was published in the 50s. The very first DSM was published in the 50s. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking, almost 70 years ago. So how in the last, up to that point, up in all of human history, that got us to the point where the American Psychiatric Association decides to write this manual about what's normal and what's abnormal. And they take it upon themselves from God only knows where, that was a pun, by the way,
and a good one,
to decide, again, what's normal, what's not normal, what's right, what's wrong. When there, historically, apparently, there's always been at least 10% of every civilization has had some expression of homosexuality or transsexuality or gender identity disorder, meaning I'm a guy, but I also like guys. And somehow that's been determined to be a problem for those cultures, all the way up, including, the 1950s when the DSM-1 was written.
Yeah.
And it's only been in the last 70 years that enough folks like us have scratched our heads and saying, why are we doing this to people? How is it actually really a problem? Why do we care? That's, to me, that's the most salient question we could be asking is, why does any of this matter?
Yeah. Well, largely it matters, I think, because it's control and manipulation. It's the ability to manage. It comes back to what a lot of it does, which is what's the lowest common denominator that will enable those that want to maintain power to maintain power. Well, if I do that, then if I can regulate it, if I can define it and regulate it, I'm even better. Because now I can focus and direct attention and or inattention to things that I deem are not important or significant. So, and then I can demonize the things that might get in the way of that.
Well, let's go with that word that just came out of your mouth, this whole demonize thing. Yeah. So first of all, you have to believe in demons for something to be able to be demonized. Mm. And that really might be where the crux of this comes from, is some kind of evil influence that's driving all of this, or that it's a perversion. I think that's really the issue, is there's a philosophical, theological belief that anything that isn't black, male, white, female, or either or, is some kind of a perversion of the purity of the two genders. And that just is not consistent in the animal kingdom or in the human species. That never will be clean like that. It will never be black and white, never has been, never will be.
Yep.
But if you read certain sacred manuscripts, it's either left or right, up or down, east or west, male or female. There is no tweener place in the good book for what we're talking about. That's, to me, where the biggest part of the problem is. And why would God even care? And especially, God created it. It happened, whether it was direct or indirect, you know, set it in motion and let evolution take over after it's all set in motion, or however it was all designed. Again, if you come back to, how is this a problem? Are transsexuals rising up and shooting police officers and causing disharmony in the streets? Are they going to schools and taking busloads of kids and raping and murdering them? No. It is not a crime against humanity that they're committing. Actually, it's just the opposite. Yeah. It's a crime against humanity that we're committing. Those of us, we would be the ones that are intolerant and have to have things like in the book of Leviticus. You know, it's like, if you do this, this, and this, and this, you're going to the place where there's fire and brimstone and there's some dude with horns that's got a pitchfork and is going to be jabbing you for all eternity.
The killer demon, the big demon, the big demon.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm reminded of, again, as we talk in terms of energy, I think that what we are observing in our current experience is that when either the male or female energy is out of balance, there is excess. And particularly, well, I would have to say in our world, but particularly in our country, the level of out of balance is being exhibited on a daily basis, minute by minute at this point, meaning that when the consistent focus is on male masculine is better, female feminine is not, and that sort of, you know, I'm calling it patriarchal, but that's still a masculine driven energy of white men, particularly, that proposed the idea that masculine is the power in the world. And there are some that, you know, there are many who know differently and who believe differently, but the amount of energy that's been put into creating this sort of masculine juggernaut is taking a lot of time to break down. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it in, I mean, just in the way our government is operating, this sort of last ditch effort to do as many ugly, horrible things that look like masculine control, and having that happen. You know, the other thing that's baffling to me, two of the states that signed these new abortion regulations were women who are Democrats, which is mind-blowing to me. They're the governors of the states, and they're signing these this legislation, which tells you how absolutely backwards this whole process is. You know, again, not I'm talking the facts of the structure, not about the topic of you know, abortion and all that. We could go on that one. But it's just fascinating that there's this preponderance of that energy, which is not helping or serving or really moving the needle forward at all. It's causing tons of stagnation. It's causing tons of destruction. And I think that it is a part of the reason that it looks so horrible right now is that it's a part of the need to bring that energy back into balance, because there is not enough of the female energy, the feminine energy, that is being allowed to express. More and more is, and it's getting better and it's getting stronger. You can see that. Again, I'm using the political arena because it's a good place to see how the flow is working, you know, where just the recent elections and the flood of women who now occupy space in the Congress, you know, which is far greater than it's ever been.
Right.
And now there is a more, the battle is waging, and you can see it happening where these women who are in these positions are being pushed to the limit, because if they act like men, they will not be successful. And that's what's been trained, is you're in this environment now, you got to act like a man. And they're going, fuck that. I'm not a man. I'm not going to act like a man.
Right.
And
that's how we got where we are to begin with.
Exactly. And so it's adding all of this, all of this addition of the feminine energy is the way that it's being exhibited through what we're watching, is all of the negative female expression is all of the petty crap that's getting tweeted, and all of the petty choices or the choices that are being made that don't support expansion or don't support positive change. Again, I'm trying to talk without getting into the minutiae, because then it becomes a political dialogue, which is not where I want to go. But it's important to recognize that balance and the out of balanceness of it, and how radically it's affecting everything in the world. And I think it affects everything from to people's lifespans, to health, to well-being, to everything, from relationships to work to money, all of it. Is on the block right now, and I think it's going to be interesting to see particularly over the next year, 2 years, as this continues to culminate, how is this going to fall out? How are we going to introduce more female energy, more feminine energy into the lexicon, into that mass consciousness, so that we can begin to come back more into balance?
Yeah, good points, Jim. As you were talking about this, I was reminded that we were trying to bring some definitions and some structure to our topic. And one of the ways that masculinity is defined is an energy of competition. Mm. And one of the ways that femininity is defined is collaboration or community. So good for the all versus good for the one. And to lay a deeper foundation underneath that, in some of the different dream distillation or dream analysis workshops and books, and just my practice of doing that with my patients, is in the dream world, when masculine figures in the dream show up, they primarily, according to these books and the way that we teach this and do this, mm-hmm. masculine energy at its core is about providing and protecting. And if need be, it will take away from one and give to another, or it will take yours to preserve and protect itself, and won't have a real problem doing that. Mm-hmm. If you look at the numbers of people across the country that have hunting licenses, I don't know what the number is, but I would say it's probably 90% men. Yeah. And 90% of those men can put the crosshairs of a hunting rifle on the outline of a deer's body and pull the trigger and have no emotional problem with taking that animal's life. And girls wouldn't do that. Girls would be thinking, well, why is it more important for me to eat than the deer to eat? It was just minding its own business, eating the little clovers and having a conversation with the bunnies and noticing the butterflies and enjoying the fragrance of the flowers that were there and noticing the wind blowing around. And gosh, you know, this was just like this harmonious moment in nature that I'm completely disrupting this right now.
Yeah.
And I hope the way I just said that did not sound patronizing. Remember, this is a male trying to be in feminine energy for a moment, and that's not my natural bent. So if that came off to any of our female listeners, please don't be upset with me right now. I was doing my best to try to get in that moment of, do I pull the trigger or not? Or why would I even be out there hunting to begin with when, you know, we don't even need to eat meat? You know, that's kind of where we are now with our society, is we can actually grow it. We can grow meat now in a laboratory. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Well, it's, and I love, you know, this is really good, you know, and particularly that last bit, because there was a little awkwardness.
There was. I felt it. Yeah, I felt it when I did it.
But I think what it demonstrates so clearly is the disconnect that occurs on a much grander scale for people who may not be as aware or conscious of their experience, that it's that they're not identifying male and female. They're just being the guy and they're just being the girl. And so I'm playing my role. And then when you try to cross over, when you try to come to a place where you can cross over, you know, and understand the two energies, sometimes it's the language is awkward. Because in ultimately, all of the words that you used in my experience are kind of a subset of the female energy. Yes, those are all components, but ultimately I think female energy is ultimately about creation. It's ultimately about, it's the receptivity. It's the allowing space. It's all of the expressions without the necessary edges, or not the unnecessary edges, I guess. Because I think your definitions were sort of science-based, and that's valuable but limited to me, because it's not really talking energy. It's kind of taking maleness and figuring out how to ascribe adjectives to it, and taking femaleness and trying to figure out how to ascribe adjectives to it. And really, it's none of that. Because you can be a fully realized male who has tons of compassion and tons of allowance in their experience. Allowance meaning there is the ability to allow whatever is happening in the world without having to judge it or fight it or beat it. There's also ways to be in the world in a masculine fashion, or in the male energy, where you can be strong and forward, but you can also be receptive and able to, like we were talking about earlier, run the spectrum. You know, that my basic personality, my core person, may be come across as a very male experience. But what's happening in here is, I know there's some edges here, but when I want to dialogue, when I want to connect, I've got to go back inside and kind of find that little bit of balance. And I've got to find the language that allows me to be who I am, but express it in a way that's balanced in energy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually going from, yeah, I'm a guy, I like guy things. And I can also sit and be warm and accepting and inviting and allowing of whoever is before me. And at the same time, I can stand my ground. At the same time, I can be clear in who I am.
Right.
That's how I see the male-female working, is that the male to me, the male energy gives me the ability to stand tall in who I think I am in this experience. The female allows me to be receptive within that experience. And then the converse is true of the male or of the female experience. You know, that when you embody the female, there is a receptivity, there is an allowing that is natural to that energy. But when you're in balance, you don't have a problem standing up and smacking somebody upside the head if that's what it takes to say, yeah, you can't cross that line. Or this is the boundary, or this is acceptable behavior, or this is unacceptable behavior. I think, you know, that we want to take this. I think if we're going to unravel the truths of it, I think we have to look at it from my perspective. We can look at the science and then we have to expand way beyond the science.
Sure. Yeah. That's just a starting point.
Yeah. No, that wasn't about anything wrong with the science. It's just that in order for the needle to move, we have to go well beyond science in the limitation of science to something greater, which to me is energy. I was looking at the definition of masculine because I was curious. And it's so interesting. The definition is so stupid. Having qualities or appearance traditionally associated with men.
That helps so much. I'm so clear now.
Oh, gosh. And there's no other, you know, relating to men, male. That's the extent of it. I'm going to look at feminine here because I just got to see if it's equally as stupid. Was that judgmental? Sorry. Oh, look, it's the exact same. Having qualities or an appearance traditionally associated with women, especially delicacy and prettiness.
Prettiness. Wow. Wow.
Interesting. And music, actually, they have more definitions here in grammar denoting a gender of nouns and adjectives conventionally regarded as female. But this actually has a third with regard to music of a cadence. So it's occurring on a metrically weak beat they call a feminine cadence. So even in music, the definition says that there is a defines the female as the feminine as weaker or less than.
But important to be pretty. And if you're not, then what?
Then what? Then you're butch.
Yikes.
Then you're not the right kind of woman. So, you know, interesting. There you have in very clear terms the definitions are not anything. They don't define anything. They just reference. It's more of like a reference point.
Yeah, but if you dove into to male or female, it would be interesting to see where that went. If it, you know, mentioned genitalia or body parts or strength or size or, you know, those sorts of things. While you're doing that, on the flip side, in the dream distillation work, the women that show up in dreams, the female aspect of that is about assigning value and meaning to relationships and things, which is a really nice way of now looking at, well, all are necessary. We do need provision. We do need protection. Those aren't bad things. As long as we're not stealing or killing or conquering to obtain them. Mm-hmm. That's where masculine goes to masculine is when, hey, let's go get those oil fields over there so we can have cheaper gas at the pump, or we'll use their oil before, you know, we use our own. Yeah. In a global strategy kind of thing. That's where masculine goes too far.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see with this election coming up, because I think it's really going to come to a head in a big way because our current president is all that energy that you're talking about. All that over excessive masculine energy that's just about wrecking, you know, destroying. So Definition of a male: of or denoting the sex that produces small, typically motile gametes, especially spermatozoa, with which a female may be fertilized or inseminated to produce offspring.
Okay, so we're talking biology and chemistry.
An equally useless definition. Wow. So?
Gonna go to the female now?
Of course. I got to see if it's going to be equally useless. Whoops. Jim, F-E, there we go. Yeah, same thing. Over denoting a sex that can bear offspring or produce eggs distinguished biologically by the production of gametes, ova, which can be fertilized by male gametes. Relating to or characteristic of women or female animals. Regarding plants or flowers, having a pistil but no stamen, of parts of machinery manufactured hollow so that a corresponding male part can be inserted. This is really distressing to me. I never thought to look at the definitions, but this is messed up. There is nothing here of value.
It's just describing biology.
It's describing biology. There's no defining of term. Wow. I don't even know what to do with that. I'm just kind of blown away that...
Well, that's why we're having the podcast, because yeah. We need some more here.
So going back to the sort of the beginning thing here, so even in the context of procreation, there is balance, meaning... the male and female are equal parts of the creation of a human being. You have to have a sperm and you have to have an egg. You can't get there from here without one and without both. There has to, because something has to fertilize the egg. So whether it's artificial or not, there still has to be a masculine component and a feminine component contributed to the initial creation of life, for the spark to happen, for the cell to become a living thing. So that process continues through the process of pregnancy, through all of that, and the whole time it's still doing the same thing up until whenever it is that gender happens, which I think is what, like 6 months or 7 months? Is it that far in?
I think it happens sooner than that.
Is it? Well, for however long it is, being mildly ignorant of that. And it isn't until the identification process happens, which we talked about earlier. So when we get that sonogram or, you know, whatever it is that goes on to determine the sex, then the training begins for the parents, for the child, for all of them. Everything becomes focused into this thing that has no real definition. I'm really irritated by that, I gotta tell you. Like, golly. So anyway, what is my point? My point is that it starts in balance and then it goes sideways. And it goes sideways because we decide to choose how we're going to approach this new life based on the sex that it has. And unfortunately, that's been true since what? As long back in history as I can think of that I ever knew about. Males were more important because they were the rulers, and females were not important because they weren't.
Well, some of this goes back to the original story. The man was here first.
So we're talking about the Adam and Eve story?
The story, yes. The man was here first, therefore he must be more important. And when the woman showed up, everything went to hell, so we can't trust them.
Yeah, I wonder who decided that. I'm wondering. I don't recall that there were many female teachers back in that time.
No, probably weren't. And please don't hear that just because I repeated the story that I believe the story or ascribe to the story.
No,
we're all laughing right now at the ridiculousness of that story, but there is a lot of truth to the theology. That's why women aren't allowed to be preachers or pastors or leaders in the church is because they were the one who succumbed to the coercions of the serpent.
Yeah, the weaker sex.
Wanted to, yeah, the weaker sex that way.
Yeah.
So some of it goes back to that. As well,
I would say that it's more than some of it.
Okay.
Mainly because if you look at most of the cultures around the planet with regard to religion, it's not much different. It's male driven, male, you know, I would be very curious. And this is where my lack of understanding in history gets me, because I would love to kind of get a sense of where that really started, and did it start that far back, or is all of it been colored that way because the masculine energy is so out of balance, meaning that what we think is true is actually just made up shit that has been remade up and remade up and remade up over millennia to satisfy wherever that started. Like, we have no way of knowing. Yeah, of course, you know, yes, there are archaeologists and people who have, like, you know, in Egypt, who have, you know, gone to great lengths to understand the culture. But the reality is, even in Egypt, there was a ruler who was extraordinarily powerful, and her name was Cleopatra, supposedly, allegedly, you know. But they could not avoid including her in that process. But what we don't know, and the part that sort of makes me go a little nutty, is how much of that history was driven by men, and how much of the history of women's influence was eradicated in that process.
Yeah.
But when did that actually happen? Is that actually is that rooted firmly in what religion has done to our experience? I would have to say that would make sense to me, because we have a habit of rewriting history to focus it on what we think, you know, what's that expression? History is written by the winners.
Right.
So it's all dominated by the male patriarchal society that decided that women are less and men are better. And that's a very religious concept, and it's a very Christian concept. Pardon me, but it is. I mean, even in Christianity, doesn't see women as equal. It's not same. Again, no bashing here, just statement of reality. So I would like to talk a little bit about that, if you have any thoughts or feedback. But it just strikes me as interesting and odd and curiously wrong that so much of everything we see in history is male dominated, and that can't be real. It simply can't be real.
Since you brought up the religion thing, did you, when you were living here in Southern California, did you ever get a chance to go to the Self-Realization Fellowship's meditation room?
I love that place.
Do you remember the meditation room where they had the five large pictures on the wall of the prophets, of which Jesus was one, Yogananda was one, I'm blanking on who the other three were, but there were these five portraits, large portraits.
I think it's Shiva and the elephant, the blue guy, and the woman.
Well, these were all human beings.
Oh, these were all human beings, okay. Uh-huh.
And what struck me, Jim, was just, I mean, I can see it in my mind like it was yesterday. They were all men. Mm-hmm. They all had long hair, but their facial features and their mannerisms were such that they were tweeners.
Yogananda looks more like a woman than a man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I'm still just so puzzled by that today, that these are, you know, according to that organization, you know, the greatest people that have been on the planet. And they weren't masculine or feminine. I mean, I agree with you that by today's standards, they probably looked more feminine because of the clothes they were wearing or their hairstyles or whatever, but just their facial features, it was like, huh, I don't know if I'm looking at a man or a woman right now. Not that it mattered. I mean, truly,
Right.
Truly, to me, not that it mattered, but I just found that as very, very interesting. It wasn't John Wayne, and it wasn't, you know, I don't know, whoever the other extreme would be on the other side who would represent the Marilyn Monroe. It wasn't Marilyn Monroe, and it wasn't John Wayne. really fascinating to me that perhaps that's the answer that we're looking for, is that true leader, the true community organizer, the true movement initiator is the one who stands in the middle and brings both energies. And it has nothing to do with whether there's a penis there or a vagina, but it's more of a, you know, the biology and the metaphysical, the biology and the energy, the prana, the chi, the soul, spirit, energetic signature is in that neutral place.
Yep. And again, energetically, the female is the female energy is the energy that holds space. The male energy is the energy that directs that energy. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? If you can't hold space, you can't direct energy. So if you don't have one, you can't have the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a lack of one or the other, it's going to be ridiculously out of balance. And the compensation to make that work is the state we're in now. It's excess. It's overbuilding, overconsuming, overarching dogma, over controlling, overruling, over. I mean, it's just. You could just continue down the list of all the excesses that are happening as a result of this ridiculous flux, or not even flux, but this ridiculous overindulgence in that male energy experience. And the cool thing, I mean, from one perspective, is we get to see the ramifications of that. We get to see how absolutely destructive it is. Because it can't be anything but. It's so out of balance. It's gonna it crashes and burns at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So the idea of the woman creating the space, creating this environment. You know, that Mother Nature. I mean, it's hysterical that Mother Nature is supposedly, you know, the Gaia, the creator of the world, the manager of this place we live, this world that we live in, is a woman. Supposedly, allegedly, but and then it's like the one, the female energy holding the space of this planet, and the male energy that's coming in and saying, yeah, you're not enough, give me more. You know, and it's sort of a weird paradoxical joke, but it's we're living it, we're watching it happen, we're watching. And look at the differences in the way that it's expressed. You know, look at the weather patterns, the way even in the course of the last 2 weeks, what did they say? 200 plus tornadoes tearing apart the middle of the country. You know, all of those things to me, while, you know, all of those expressions to me are actually expressions of the female energy, because they're all about air and water. They're all about that. The strong female traits that are having to express in a highly aggressive fashion to release all of this pent up energy. You know, these storms are building so much intensity and energy, and then they come through and they're, you know, and so now we have floods. Well, floods are water. Water is emotion. Emotion is, it's all about lack of connection, lack of people coming together in that energy. So rather than being able to, because it's so excessive on the masculine side, it has to be excessive on the feminine side until it comes to a middle point. Now, what is that point going to be? Don't know. Hopefully it's something we'll get to witness and experience, and maybe it ties some into the stuff, you know, much of the stuff that we've talked about before, which is, you know, whatever people are calling the ascension or calling, you know, this major shift in consciousness. My inclination is to think that it has to do with that coming into balance. And if we can, And those that can then have a different experience of the world than those that can't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, we've kind of gone in a bunch of different directions as we normally do and hit a variety of different topics and concepts. And I'm still coming back to when you talk about not enough, the masculine energy wants more. And I was tossing out that word that symbolizes that, which is competition.
Yeah.
For the most part, women are not that interested in competition. And they're certainly not interested in blood sport to the level of competition that it would involve life or death, like a war. Mm-hmm. Or the gladiator sort of mindset. And I think we're all in a place where we realize that things like cockfights and bullfights and that just there really is no need or no place for that any longer. That is what we would call barbaric, which happens to be, you know, very, very masculine energy.
Yep.
It's so nice that we're now teaching, you know, I'm hearing kindergartner teachers talk about they have circles that the kids all sit in where they have expression sessions. Mm. And both little boys and little girls are taught to express how they feel about Bobby or Billy taking Cindy's pencil and breaking it. Or, you know, I don't like it when so-and-so hits me or kicks me or bites me, and we're able to talk about it and express it. And hopefully that will result in less bullying in middle school or high school, as we can talk rather than hit or strike or steal or poke. That didn't happen when I was in kindergarten, that's for sure.
Well, and I think it speaks to what we've been really addressing here is the confusion. You know, that these, especially kids now, being pigeonholed into an expression has got to be, I mean, I can't imagine it at my age now, but we didn't have the same understanding as kids. I mean, it was really driven on an individual's fortitude, whether they could maintain themselves through that. You know, because there's not a kid on the planet that I can think of that didn't ever get bullied sometime or another, you know, and so it's become such a thing. But I think the thing is pointing in the wrong direction, meaning to this conversation, the problem with the bullying is the training. It's not the schools. It's not the kids. It's mm-hmm. the training.
Right.
If you give your kids permission to express who they are, there's no need to battle. If you give kids an understanding of there's plenty of everything, there's no need for competition. But kids are being brought into the world with a plan. You know, I'm having a kid and this kid is going to be X.
Right.
Kid is going to go here. You know, I'm going to raise my kid right. You know, and so what you get is exactly what we're seeing, which is a bunch of very confused little people who only see good, bad, right, wrong, yes, no, because they don't have the cognitive function to delineate any more than that. They're not old enough. They don't have enough capacity or life experience. So it's whatever they're trained into. You're different. I'm told different's wrong. I'm punching you because you're different and you're irritating me. I'm attacking you because you threaten me. I'm calling you names because you make me feel uncomfortable. And as a boy, it's not okay to be uncomfortable or whatever the crap is that, you know, whatever the nonsense is that kind of propagates that. But it really falls to ultimately to the, obviously the parents, but it falls to the culture to change the dialogue, change the focus. You know, we're not, I think it's the danger of lots of things that we do now. Like while I enjoy American Idol as just something to entertain me, I love watching the singing and I love watching the growth and evolution that people go through in that process. But it's so fascinating to me that a large part of that process is having to break down the identities that they've created for themselves in order for them to find their voice in a way that they can express it in order to win this competition. Because typically the person who wins is the one who has the greatest transformation in finding who they are through music. Right. So, but the problem with the whole thing, and I didn't bring it up for that reason, actually is on the front end, which is, it's really kind of scary when you watch and this 15 or 16 year old kid, or even 18 or 20 year old kid, is auditioning, and their whole thing has been, I've been looking for this for my whole life. Like, this is my identity. This is, and this has been my idea. And this is, so this kid is brought into the world. The parents observe that they have a skill for singing. So they turn them on to, you know, they turn them on to American Idol. And then the kid becomes fixated on, this is what I'm supposed to be. This is what's going to make mom and dad happy. This is what's going to make me happy, because I've been told it's going to make me happy. So I believe it's going to make me happy. And so it becomes this process of, again, bastardizing the male and female energy, forcing a focus, forcing a direction, and then they're your parents. These are the people that bring you into the world. You're going to honor, as a child, the things that they believe to be correct, because that's where you're learning from. So then it becomes a snowball effect, you know. And it's just fascinating to me that it really has to come back to changing the dialogue with parents, to kids, with how we introduce kids into society. And I mean, it's a big deal, and one that is very tough to unravel, which kind of makes me sad, because you look at the state of the state, and you keep going, okay, we got to keep moving forward here. Where is this going to go? And it's not really clear. We don't know whether we're ending up in some form of destruction or some new creation.
Yeah.
You know,
since we're on the topic of little boys and girls and kids and all, I'm constantly reminded by the preponderance of boys who are playing these first person shooter video games. Not just a little bit, but we're talking about hours and hours each day.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating to me about this is it's all virtual. Mm-hmm. Most of these little boys don't actually have a gun, never shot a gun, don't go out and build tree forts anymore, have given up riding their skateboards or their bicycles, and they're just sitting in front of a screen expressing all of this latent, pent-up masculine energy that goes nowhere and does nothing except makes the video game developers profitable.
Yeah.
And it's alarming to me, again, the number of hours that are spent playing these with their friends and the whole online community that they develop and never meet. They never meet these people in person, mm-hmm. but they'll all have some kind of an experience that, and they all think that they're going to make money from this someday, that they're going to compete because somebody does and is. And it's absolutely mind-boggling. I guess it's not that different than playing t-ball and think you're going to get to the major leagues one day, or football and you'll make it to the NFL, or basketball and you'll get to the NBA, and whatever the counter of that would be on the feminine side, if I can learn to bake or sew. But who's doing that anymore? I mean, these real skills have all gone virtual now, that people are not actually having real analog experiences any longer. It's all a digital mind thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering how that's going to actually turn out. You know, you take this 12-year-old kid, add 2 decades to that, now they're in their 30s and they've still never owned a gun or shot one. And I'm not saying you need to or should be doing those things, but they identify as, like, I'm Billy Badass in the virtual world, but I've never thrown a punch, never gone to a karate class, never done any of these things. How's that going to turn out?
Well, you see how it's turning out. It's called lack of connection. It's called opioid epidemic. It's it's called obesity. It's called alcoholism. It's called lots of things that we identify now that are all driven from that very thing, that lack of connection that makes them think they're connected, that artificially stimulates their aggressive energy, and then they need somewhere to express it. So what's the big deal? I can pull a trigger and splatter somebody on a screen. I could splatter 100 of them. How hard is it to walk into school and splatter a few? But it's going to be pretty cool to watch that, you know, because that experience, because the amount of time in that experience, that's normalized for them. So lack of connection and excessive energy are normalized, and they have nowhere to go with that. There's nowhere in the world that you can use that energy productively. Nowhere. It doesn't exist. You know, I mean, and listeners, if you're hearing me, don't hesitate to comment if there are places you think that's true or that it can be, but I don't see it. I don't see it. What I see are a lot of non-productive people who end up into some form of addiction, who can't seem to get themselves out of it and end up dead, you know, or end up in prison because they don't have any connection and they don't have any control. Because they're trying to control something that was artificially manufactured in them.
Right.
You know, the one place I can think of in expression is that they can go into the military.
Yeah. And then they come out with PTSD, or they go become a mercenary and they whack themselves after they've lived that brutal lifestyle for so long, which again is, I think you hallmarked it by talking about it or epitomizing it as a form of ultimate disconnection, which I believe is the opposite of really what divine feminine energy would be about, unifying and connecting and bonding, including, not ostracizing.
Exactly.
There might also be equally a pandemic social media, I believe largely you could put in the category of a feminine energy because it has the illusion of connection, which isn't that different from video gaming, other than you're just not killing people and splatting heads on walls or whatever.
No, you're just calling everybody names and deciding that, you know, your opinion is the opinion.
Yeah. I don't know where we're going right now, Jim. We're still letting this dialogue.
I think what we're doing and what I'm inclined to want to do here is to say, okay, so how can we encourage, because this truly, for me, as we talk, the more we talk, the more upsetting it is, because what we're unraveling are the layer upon layer upon layer of the same shit that it's in everything. It's built into the culture. And it's really on us as individuals, as individual people, to find those ways to connect and find those ways, especially if you're a parent, to seriously sit and consider what are you programming into your kid? You know, some people don't care. Some people are like, yeah, that's my kid. That's my boy. That's my boy. You know, and like, ooh, it just makes me go, ooh. You know, it's like, because it's, you know, for me, I think that's probably one of the reasons I'm glad I didn't have kids, because I wouldn't even know where to go with that. You know, I'm willing to say, yikes.
Yeah. When you said that, what it felt like was that imaginary father recognizing those masculine behaviors and traits in his son and being proud of it as if he's replicated it or passed it along.
Yep.
And because he's part of the club, he feels good about it. So I've raised a boy to be in this club that I'm part of that has all this masculine expression.
Yeah. So what do you think about on an individual basis? So for the people listening to us, whether men, women, you know, there's a lot to be triggered by in this conversation. I'm sure we've pushed a lot of buttons and a lot of things that have been said, and good, quite honestly, good, because I think we need to wake the heck up. This is this is not, I think, what we really desired, you know, and I think there's enough people out that are trying to create the change. But instead of looking at it on a broad stroke, it's all focused into these little narrow strips, you know, so it's how we get, you know, from regulating women's bodies to elections, to being a part of a government structure, to what about the day-to-day women? What about the people just out there doing whatever they're doing, working at the law firm or working at Walmart or working at McDonald's or whatever? How can they begin to impact on an individual level? How do we begin to do that in ourselves? You know, it's tough to me when you go really broad and you start to see the scope of the mass conscious animal. It's at times very disheartening and very overwhelming. And I think that it's important that you see it and understand it, but then you've got to take your attention off of it and put the attention back on to where it's starting, which is here. And focusing on, okay, every day, how am I expressing? Am I balanced in my expression? Am I allowing myself to be balanced in my expression? What parts as an adult now, what parts of me are still operating from that I'm a guy or I'm a girl?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how much time and energy are you willing to place in getting more clarity and understanding about how that, what does that mean to me? You know, what does it mean to me to be a man, and how do I like to express that? How does it feel good? How do I feel uplifted when I express it? You know, if I'm a woman, how do I feel empowered? How do I feel the strength of who I am? How do I tap into that masculine part of myself so that I stand upright and declare who I am and be comfortable in that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
At the same time that I'm doing that, I'm not assessing or judging or deciding that you're less than because I'm who I am.
Right.
You know, it's sort of that whole thing of, I know they talk about in Law of Attraction, is the illusion of competition is that there is not enough to go around.
Right. Limited resources. Yep. Limited
resources that, you know, I can't have my slice if you have yours. That's twisted as all get out. You know?
Yeah. Feminine energy would say there is definitely enough pie for everybody.
Yeah.
We can all have a piece.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, if there isn't enough for everybody, I don't want any. That's the true expression of it.
Yeah. So do you have ways in your, that you can identify, like in your practice as you're working with people? Because I noticed, like, for me, the only way gender or that actually comes into play is just because it happens to be a female body sitting in front of me, or happens to be a male body sitting in front of me. But it doesn't matter. The language that I use, the approach is the same, in that it's a neither either or kind of situation. You know, like the approach is not different because you're a guy. The approach is not different because you're a girl. You know, therapeutically, I'm saying that.
Right.
I mean, it could be, and that's why I would love to hear how you see that, or how that's migrated or grown or changed in your own experience. Because to me, it's like everything we've talked about. I'm not talking to a guy. I'm talking to a being who is looking to figure out how to balance this world that they're living in, and they're living in an excessive male energy, or they're a guy living in excessive female energy and need to figure out how to bring more of the balance into their experience. And there are lots of ways to do that.
Right.
And if you don't have any answer, that's okay. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about that with regard to...
You would really think I wouldn't have an answer? Wow.
No, I didn't. I was just getting... Okay. I don't even know why those words came out of my mouth, actually.
The first thing that came to my mind was agreeing with what you were saying, was it doesn't matter. This notion I have of we're all here playing a role in a screenplay that we wrote before we came here. And we'll get to be in many screens. We have been in many plays. We will continue to be in many plays. And to be a good actor, you have to play a wide range of roles. And we get to do this in these lives that we live. And sometimes people even change their roles in one lifetime. Oftentimes you need a new family and a new body and a new country and ethic, blah, 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 to really pull that off. But some people are making broad sweeping radical changes in their role in one lifetime, which is pretty impressive. But neither here nor there about all of that. Where I'm trying to help people is, regardless of what role you're playing and regardless of where you are on the continuum of masculine and feminine energy, and even how much you may want to change that or not, can you just love and accept yourself as you are? And can you love and accept the other people that are showing up in your life where they are? And that's it. And that is not an easy task. It may sound simple in concept or principle, but learning to apply that can take a lifetime sometimes. Hopefully not, but it can.
Yeah. Well, I'm
thinking of Dustin Hoffman in his role Tootsie, and the awards that were won for a man playing the role of a woman. And I think Eddie Murphy tried to double that when he made a movie where he played all the roles. He acted all the roles in the movie. And we went, wow, how did you do that? That's pretty impressive. When I was a consultant for a TV show a long time ago called Pensacola Wings of Gold. And each week, and I was doing that for about 6 months, and each week there would be a new cast that would, the supporting cast would show up. There'd always be three or four new actors and actresses that would be the, you know, whatever the episode was that week that was going to change, it required new actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed was their acting personality and their real personality were not that far apart. And that's how people get typecast. They really are kind of who they are that you see on the screen.
Yeah.
I did not see a huge wide range of somebody that would off camera throw a football around or a frisbee or have dialogue with me about what they were doing after we were done working or whatever. And then when they got on camera, pulled off this entirely different personality, that they were kind of who they were is who they were. And that's why they were brought in to play that role in the episode. So I kind of see us doing the same thing, is that we're all actors in our lives leading and playing these roles that we're playing. Mm-hmm. Again, none of them are more or less important. And the more roles we play, the more I can understand what it's like to truly be human, which is a huge range of expression, a huge, huge range of expression.
Yep.
I don't know if that was even close to answering or trying to answer your question, or even if there was a question there, but
that's
what
perfect.
I wound up with.
No, it was perfect, because what you're talking about, we're talking about the same thing. You just put different words to it, which I think is awesome, because it covers a whole other scope of people. And that is the thing that I think really distilled it is the range of human expression, that it's a huge range, and that in and of itself should speak volumes to most of us, that in the realization that, you know, there really is no limitation except what we place on ourselves. And as far as expression is concerned, as far as understanding what our expression is, that it's happening inside. Nobody monitors that but me. Nobody controls that but me. Nobody has any influence over that unless I allow it. So if that's the case, then wow, I've got all of this potential that I haven't even touched yet, because I've been so busy worrying about this one and that one and this one and that one and mom said and dad said and this one and that one, that I haven't stopped long enough to go, yeah, but what is Jim? What's going on with Jim?
Right.
How's this relationship? And so it just being able to explore that spectrum is extraordinary, and is I think, to my way of thinking, is the purpose of life. It's what you're here for. You know, it's not to be locked. I mean, sure, everybody can come and do what they do. And I'm not saying that someone who's not exploring that spectrum isn't alive and isn't living a life. I'm just saying that as a part of the idea of we are ever evolving, expanding consciousness, that's the natural place to go, that the more we allow that expansion, the more parts of ourselves come online And the more that happens, the more expression we have. And suddenly we're running this amazing range of experience, an amazing range of feeling, and being able to have experiences that are deeply satisfying and experiences that are deeply unsatisfying. And neither of them can knock you off the spectrum. They just enhance the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're giving permission to that either excessive male or female energy, depending on whether it's positive or negative, to have full reign for a minute to unfurl, because that's how you're going to find out what limitations you may have or may think you have.
Right. As we've been dialoguing over the last 5 to 10 minutes, I've had a thought that just keeps coming, and I'm like, well, is this the time and place to talk about this or introduce this, or is this in episode whatever the next one's going to be? But it keeps coming, so I want to at least put it out there as a consideration of how we might be able to make some changes or consider how we've arrived at our own beliefs and values on feminism or masculinity. You probably remember, because we're close to the same age. When I was a kid, when I first remember dolls, I remember Raggedy Ann and Andy as cloth dolls that kids played with. And there was largely not massive differentiation between the two dolls. You could tell that Andy was a boy doll and that Raggedy Ann was a girl doll.
And that was all by clothing and hair.
Right. And that was about it. So then, for me, in my memory anyway, that evolved into Ken and Barbie.
Mm.
And there are massive distinctions between Ken and Barbie.
Yes.
And maybe about the same time, maybe before, maybe a little after, G.I. Joe is also wildly popular. And G.I. Joe and Ken, I don't know if they were both made by Mattel, but they were the same dimensions. They were the same height.
Mm-hmm.
But so my choices as a little boy of who to identify with, Ken, the preppy guy that drives the convertible red Mustang and wears the sweater over his back and plays tennis with Barbie, or G.I. Joe, who's the more rugged, you know, got all these different. Anyway, those were my choices. I had two choices, G.I. Yeah. Joe or Ken. And Ken didn't appeal to me, so I actually became G.I. Joe. Now that I think about it,
yeah,
I did that. I can own that. But I've also kind of been the Ken, you know, went to school, got an education, can clean up, you know, so I can do either one. But little girls only had Barbie. And Barbie didn't have, as I recall, Barbie was a slut. And still is today in my mindset. She doesn't epitomize I mean, she's a bimbo. Barbie's a bimbo. And please, if I'm offending anybody right now, go look all this stuff up yourself. I mean, yeah. The women don't like Barbie today because Barbie's like one dimensional, and women and femininity is so much more than one dimensional. Yeah. I had two dimensions. I had the clean, preppy, go to college, look like Ken, or go join the military and be a rugged, you know, masculine macho guy or whatever.
Yep.
Girls only had one choice. And that, you know, that went on for a long time. That wasn't just like 5 years or something. There were decades of that.
Yep.
And I'm not enough of a toy expert to know, did Barbie ever have a friend? Did Susie ever come along, and was Susie a little less bimbo-ish and
no,
more whatever. I don't remember.
There were brunettes and there were redheads, but they were the same, you know. And then, I mean, as you know, once we got into like the late 70s, 80s, then you got the Bratz dolls and the Cabbage Patch Kids and, you know, a whole different array of them that were a little bit more, maybe, actually not. The Bratz dolls were just exaggerated femininity. And they were brats. you know? But that's remarkable. And again, comes back to that whole idea of just amazing to me that even down to the dolls, the structure was enforced.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of, because it's been for me most of my life, this idea of doing what David Wilcox does, you know, sort of flying in the face of that. What am I trying to say here? The conspiracy theory idea.
Uh huh.
You know, I for most of my life, I kind of abhorred that whole approach to life. You know, that there's a conspiracy and the conspiracy theories and it's really hard. It's so funny talking about this topic that you can see, it's not hard to see, rationally look at the evolution of these concepts and ideas through our culture. It's not an illusion. It's not made up. It's a very real thing. That's a very real challenge, you know? And it's hard not to kind of have that little kind of conspiracy theory feeling about it, because it's not something that's talked about, but I don't really think it's a conspiracy theory. I think it's an actualized reality that's been occurring for decades, that for hundreds of years, actually, that needs to shift.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. But yeah, that you're, you know, the Barbies and the Kens, and yeah, man, just amazing. And we wonder why we have kind of screwed up identity problems. You know, and wondering how did some of us manage to escape some of it, you know? Like,
well, I want to push just a little bit more, and I know we're kind of going long on the podcast. We'll probably wrap it up here shortly, but I'm having an inspiration regarding the evolution of dolls. If we kind of started out with Raggedy Ann and Andy, and we wound up with Ken and Barbie and G.I. Joe, and then the Cabbage Patch Kids, and I can't remember exactly what they looked like, but then there was also this big, huge fad of, do you remember Beanie Babies?
Oh yeah.
And so we kind of went away from anatomically representations of the masculine and feminine. And oh, by the way, as a man, it's a lot easier to try to typify. I could look like Ken or G.I. Joe, but there isn't a woman on the planet that could actually ever look like Barbie. It was anatomically impossible to have the length of legs, the skinny waist, and the big boobs. It literally impossible. So
you've
here,
seen them though, right? You've seen the women who've tried?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And they look hideous and ridiculous. And I know that sounds like a judgment, but you know, I was like, gosh, why did that's such a shame that you'd even attempt to do that. But isn't that interesting that on the masculine side, it was doable, but on the feminine side is not doable, not even close to being possible to replicate that or emulate that. So anyway, we wound up with Cabbage Patch. We went away from the anatomical dolls toward Beanie Babies. We wound up with SpongeBob SquarePants, and then we end up with Barney the Purple Dinosaur.
Oh yeah, no, but you forgot about the American Girls.
I'm sorry. I not only forgot about them, I can't even place them in my mind.
Those are the dolls that you make to order.
I don't know anything about this.
Oh, they're actual stores. You go to the store and you start with a neutral doll, and then you add all of the things you want to that doll. The clothing, the hair color, the hairstyle, the everything. And they come in their very special box, and they're very expensive, and just a new generation of the same thing.
Okay.
But now you can pick how you want to feel inadequate instead of just being inadequate, because that's where it starts.
So you can do it to yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Consciously involved in feeling completely inadequate.
Wow.
Hmm. Yeah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Yeah, but to your point, yes, we are at that place in our podcast that it's time to bring it to a close. I wish that there was more to, I mean, I think we stimulated a lot of stuff here. It'll be fun to see over the intervening weeks what shows up in comments and what shows up just for ourselves as far as where we go next with the conversations and,
right.
It continues to be an amazing adventure as we unravel, because things become clearer and clearer. Sometimes that doesn't feel great. But we started this puppy with starting with male and female, and then looking at masculine and feminine, and looking at definitions to find out that there aren't any of any consequence that have any value to help understand the concepts. So our goal was to try to unravel that some and talk in more depth about those concepts and the energy and how it impacts us, and how we can individually stimulate feeling and experiencing the full spectrum of our humanness, from the masculine end to all the way to the feminine experience, and being good with that and being comfortable with allowing that expression, because it's what enriches the entire experience of being on the planet.
Right. Right.
So, that's my little bit of closing.
That was a nice summary. Where I could see us going in the future would be, some of the idea of patriarchy and matriarchy, and how some sociologists have documented that there's about a 10,000 year shift between those two poles. Mm-hmm. That historically there have been traditionally matriarchal societies and patriarchal societies, and there's about 10,000 years in between them. It's a cycle. So that would be a fun place to go in our future podcast. Since the name of our podcast is Adventures in Truth, some of the truths I think that we've explored and touched on and hopefully reinforced is that value-wise, no greater value between one or other, the other sex or gender, right, or masculine or feminine. Where it gets confusing is maybe where we are in that cycle of the masculine or feminine. And in today's world, we don't really have to provide or protect, perhaps like after the last ice age, where there wasn't a Costco to get food and the only way to eat was to kill.
Yeah.
And we were meat eaters back then, and we're, you know, because plants didn't grow. So by necessity, masculine energy had much more of a value, because we lived with saber-toothed lions and we lived with wolf packs and marauding neighborly tribes. There was a value to masculinity that really doesn't exist now. Or there was a need for masculinity that, on the scale of survivability, we don't need it anymore. We literally do not need it anymore the way that perhaps we once did. And that's perhaps a lot of the confusion, is it's still programmed inside some of us, but there's no viable way to express it. So all we have to do is raise tariffs and close down abortion clinics, and expresses it, say itself that way.
Yeah,
maybe, I don't know, but I could see that maybe that's where we go in another podcast.
Yeah, good. Excited to have shared this wonderful experience here in this conversation, and excited also to, if the viewers aren't, or the listeners aren't aware, our website is up, www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. And you can check out all of our podcasts and our blogs, learn a bit more about Jeff and I and our backgrounds. We are live now on iTunes and Stitcher and Deezer and Podcast Addict and Spotify. So the podcast is readily available across the universe and getting larger.
Thank you, Jim, for doing that. I really appreciate pushing that out there.
So we're excited to see where it's evolving to, but come check us out. And of course, Facebook and everywhere else. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're a little bit everywhere.
Wow.
But looking to really create some impact, and hopefully, you know, this particular podcast will have some impact on you. So thanks for joining us.
Sayonara.
Sayonara, brother. Good seeing you. Talk soon. We dove in, didn't we?
We did.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.